Chapter 52. In Search of a Remedy. Slumped on the stool in the Gleeman's room, Matt grimaced as Tom coughed again. How are we going to keep looking if he's so bloody sick he can't walk? He was ashamed as soon as he thought it. Tom had been as assiduous in searching as he had, pushing himself day and night when he had to know he was coming down sick. Matt had been so absorbed in his hunt that he had paid too little attention to Tom's coughing. The change from constant rain to steamy heat had not helped it. "Come on, Tom," he said. "Lopar says there's a wise woman not far. That is what they call a wisdom here, a wise woman. Wouldn't naive like that?"
"I do not need any foul-tasting concoctions poured down my throat, boy."
Tom stuffed a fist through his mustaches in a vain attempt to stop his hacking.
"You go ahead looking. Just give me a few hours on my bed, and I'll join you."
The racking wheezes doubled him over till his head was almost on his knees.
"So I'm supposed to do all the work while you take your ease?" Matt said lightly. "How can I find anything without you? You learn most of what we hear."
That was not exactly true. Men talked as freely over dice as they did while buying a Gleeman a cup of wine. More freely than they did with a Gleeman hacking so hard they feared contagion. But he was beginning to think that Tom's cough was not going to go away by itself. "If the old goat dies on me, who will I play stones with?" he told himself roughly.
"Anyway, your bloody coughing keeps me awake even in the next room."
Ignoring the white-haired man's protests, he pulled Tom to his feet. He was shocked at how much of the Gleeman's weight he had to support. Despite the damp heat, Tom insisted on his patch-covered cloak. Matt had his own coat unbuttoned completely and all three ties of his shirt undone, but he let the old goat have his way. No one in the common room even looked up as he half-carried Tom out into the muggy afternoon. The innkeeper had given simple directions, but when they reached the gate and faced the mud of the mola, Matt almost turned back to ask another wise woman. There had to be more than one in a city this size. Tom's wheezing decided him. With a grimace, Matt stepped off into the mud, half-carrying the Gleeman. He had thought from the directions that they must have passed the wise woman's house on their way up from the dock that first night, and when he saw the long, narrow house with bunches of herbs hanging in the windows, right next to a potter's shop, he remembered it. Lopar had said something about going to the back door, but he had had enough of mud. And the stink of fish, he thought, frowning at the barefoot men squelching by with their baskets on their backs. There were tracks of horses in the street, too, just beginning to be obliterated by feet and ox carts. Horses pulling a wagon, or maybe a carriage. He had seen nothing but oxen drawing carts or wagons, either one in Tyr. The nobles and the merchants were proud of their fine stock and never let one be put to anything like work. But he had not seen any carriages since leaving the walled city, either. Dismissing horses and wheel tracks from his mind, he took Tom to the front door and knocked. After a time, he knocked again. Then again. He was on the point of giving up and returning to the White Crescent despite Tom coughing on his shoulder when he heard shuffling footsteps inside. The door opened barely more than a crack, and a stout, gray-haired woman peered out.
"What do you want?"
she asked in a tired voice. Matt put on his best grin.
"Light, but I am getting sick myself at all these people who sound like there's no bloody hope. Mother Gwena? My name is Matt Cawthon. Kavan Lopar told me you might do something for my friend's cough. I can pay well."
She studied them a moment, seemed to listen to Tom's wheezes, then sighed.
"I suppose I can still do that, at least. You might as well come in."
She swung the door open and was already plodding toward the back of the house before Matt moved. Her accent sounded so much like the Ammerlin's that he shivered, but he followed, all but carrying Tom.
"I don't need this," the Gleeman wheezed. "Bloody mixtures always taste like dung."
"Shut up, Tom." Leading them all the way to the kitchen, the stout woman rummaged in one of the cupboards, taking out small stone pots and packets of herbs while muttering to herself. Matt sat Tom down in one of the high-backed chairs and glanced through the nearest window. There were three good horses tied out back. He was surprised the wise woman had more than one, or any for that matter. He had not seen anyone in Tyr riding except nobles and the wealthy, and these animals looked as if they had cost more than a little silver.
Horses again. I don't care about bloody horses now.
Mother Gwenna brewed some sort of strong tea with a rank smell and forced it down Tom's throat, holding his nose when he tried to complain. That decided she had less fat on her than he had thought, from the way she held the gleeman's head steady in the crook of one arm while she poured the black liquid into him, no matter how hard he tried to stop her. When she took the cup away, Tom coughed and scrubbed at his mouth with equal vigor.
Gah, woman, I don't know whether you mean to drown me or kill me with a taste. You ought to be a bloody blacksmith.
You will take the same twice a day till that hacking is gone, she said firmly. And I have a salve that I'll rub on your chest every night.
Some of the weariness left her voice as she confronted the gleeman, fists on her broad hips.
That salve stinks as bad as this tea tastes, but you will rub it on, thoroughly, or I'll drag you upstairs like a scrawny carp in a net and tie you to a bed with that cloak of yours. I never had a gleeman come to me before, and I'll not let the first one that does cough himself to death.
Tom glowered and blew out his mustaches with a cough, but he seemed to take her threat seriously. At least he did not say anything, but he looked as if he meant to throw her tea and her salve right back at her. The more this Mother Gwenna talked, the more she sounded like the Ammerlin to Matt. From the sour look on Tom's face and the steady stare on hers, he decided he had better smooth matters over a little before the gleeman refused to take her medicines. And she decided to make him.
I knew a woman once who talked like you, he said. All fish and nets and things. Sounded like you, too. The same accent, I mean. I suppose she's Tyron.
Perhaps. The gray-haired woman suddenly sounded tired again, and she kept staring at the floor.
I knew some girls with the sound of your speech on their tongues, too. Two of them had it, anyway.
She sighed heavily. Matt felt his scalp prickle. My luck can't be this good. But he would not bet a copper on two other women with Two Rivers accents just happening to be in Tyr.
Three girls. Young women. Named Egwene and Nynaeve and Elaine. That one has hair like the sun and blue eyes.
She frowned at him.
Those were not the names they gave, she said slowly. Yet I suspected they did not give me their true names. But they had their reasons, I thought. One of them was a pretty girl with bright blue eyes and red-gold hair to her shoulders.
She described Nynaeve with her braid to her waist, and Egwene with her big, dark eyes and ruddy smile, too. Three pretty women as different from one another as they could be.
I see they are the ones you know, she finished. I am sorry, boy.
Why are you sorry? I've been trying to find them for days. Light, I walked right past this place the first night. Right past them. I wanted random. What could be more random than where a ship docks on a rainy night, and where you happen to look in a bloody lightning flash? Burn me, burn me. Tell me where they are, Mother Gwenna.
The gray-haired woman stared wearily at the stove where her spouted kettle was steaming.
Her mouth worked, but she said nothing.
Where are they? Matt demanded. It is important. They are in danger if I don't find them.
You do not understand, she said softly. You are an outlander. The High Lords...
I do not care about any...
Matt blinked and looked at Tom. The gleeman seemed to be frowning, but he was coughing so hard Matt could not be sure.
What do the High Lords have to do with my friends?
You just do not...
Don't tell me I do not understand. I will pay for the information.
Mother Gwenna glared at him.
I do not take money for...
She grimaced fiercely.
You ask me to tell you things I have been told not to speak of. Do you know what will happen to me if I do, and you breathe my name? I will lose my tongue to begin. Then I will lose other parts before the High Lords have what is left of me hung up to scream its last hours as a reminder to others to obey. And it will do those young women no good, not my telling or my dying.
I promise I will never mention your name to anyone. I swear it. And I'll keep that oath, old woman, if you'll only tell me where they bloody are.
Please, they are in danger.
She studied him for a long time. Before she was done, he had the feeling she knew every detail of him.
On that oath, I will tell you. liked them. But you can do nothing. You are too late, Matrim Cawthon. Too late by nearly 3 hours. They have been taken to the stone. The High Lord Saman sent for them.
She shook her head in worried puzzlement.
He sent women who could channel. I hold nothing against Aes Sedai myself, but that is against the law. The law the High Lords made. If they break every other law, they would not break that one. Why would a High Lord send Aes Sedai on his errands? Why would he want those girls at all?
Matt almost burst out laughing.
Aes Sedai, Mother Gwenna, you had my heart in my throat, and maybe my liver, too. If Aes Sedai came for them, there is nothing to worry about. All three of them are going to be Aes Sedai themselves. Not that I like it much, but that's what they...
His grin faded at the heavy way she shook her head.
Boy, those girls fought like lionfish in a net. Whether they mean to be Aes Sedai or not, those who took them treated them like bilge pumpings. Friends do not give bruises like that.
He felt his face twisting.
Aes Sedai hurt them? What in the light? The bloody stone. It makes the palace in Camelin look like walking into a barnyard. Burn me! I stood right out there in the rain and stared at this house. Burn me for a bloody light-blinded fool!
If you break your hand, Mother Gwenna said, I will splint and poultice it. But if you damage my wall, I will strip your hide like a redfish.
He blinked, then looked at his fist, at scraped knuckles. He did not even remember punching the wall. The broad woman took his hand in a strong grip, but the fingers she used to probe were surprisingly gentle.
Nothing broken, she grunted after a while.
Her eyes were just as gentle as she studied his face.
It seems you care for them. One of them, at least. I suppose it is. I am sorry, Matt Cawthon.
Don't be, he told her. At least I know where they are now. All I have to do is get them out. He fished out his last 2 Andoran gold crowns and pressed them into her hand. For Tom's medicines, and for letting me know about the girls. On impulse, he gave her a quick kiss on the cheek and a grin. And that's for me.
Startled, she touched her cheek, not seeming to know whether to look at the coins or at him. Get them out, you say? Just like that? Out of the stone?
Abruptly, she stabbed him in the ribs with a finger as hard as a tree stub.
You remind me of my husband, Matt Cawthon. He was a headstrong fool who would sail into the teeth of a gale and laugh, too. I could almost think you'll manage it.
Suddenly, she saw his muddy boots, apparently for the first time.
It took me 6 months to teach him not to track mud into my house. If you do get those girls out, whichever of them you have your eye on will have a hard time training you to make you fit to be let inside.
You are the only woman who could do that, he said with a grin that broadened at her glare.
Get them out. That's all I have to do. Bring them out of the stone of bloody tear.
Tom coughed again. He isn't going into the stone like that. Only how do I stop him?
Mother Gwenna, can I leave my friend here? I think he is too sick to go back to the inn.
What?
Tom barked. He tried to push himself out of the chair, coughing so he could hardly speak.
I am no such thing, boy. You think walking into the stone will be like walking into your mother's kitchen? You think you would make it as far as the gates without me?
He hung on the back of the chair, his wheezing and hacking keeping him from rising more than halfway to his feet. Mother Gwenna put a hand on his shoulder and pushed him back down as easily as a child. The gleeman gave her a startled look.
I will take care of him, Matt Cawthon, she said.
No!
Tom shouted.
You cannot do this to me. You can't leave me with this old...
Only her hand on his shoulder kept him from doubling over. Matt grinned at the white-haired man.
I've enjoyed knowing you, Tom.
As he hurried out into the street, he found himself wondering why he had said that.
He isn't going to bloody die.
That woman will keep him alive if she has to drag him kicking and screaming out of his grave by his mustaches.
Yes, but who is going to keep me alive?
Ahead of him, the Stone of Tyr loomed over the city, impregnable, a fortress besieged 100 times.
a stone on which 100 armies had broken their teeth. And he had to get inside somehow and bring out 3 women somehow. With a laugh that made even the sullen folk in the street look at him, he headed back for the White Crescent, uncaring of mud or the damp heat. He could feel the dice tumbling inside his head.